think of Chancellor Brown in the broad term of anything that you do that dramatically portrays any kind of biblical concept, whether it's a Bible story, portrayal of Bible stories, or whether it's portrayal of a concept, or in any way, shape, or form that it can be brought into, that drama can be brought into use in the church. And various ways that this can be done would be like through dramatization of Bible stories. And that, you know, is kind of fun when you're working with small children. We kind of did that this morning. Let's see, your name is Kathy, right? Didn't we? What Bible stories did we portray this morning in over at Narnia?
Well, the one where Jesus was coming on Palm Sunday.
All right, where Jesus was coming in on Palm Sunday, and we kind of portrayed that, and everybody participated and went crazy. And but
what age was
that?
The Fonz?
Over at Narnia.
The Fonz?
The five, I don't know which group is which, but it was five and up the whole game.
Oh.
We did it on little portraits. And then we also did one that was sort of impromptu that, whatever that boy's name was.
John.
All right, and what was that about, do you remember?
That was the people
and they found bread with the kids and they fed the 5,000. It was that kind of easy. But anyway, we had fun with that, you know, and maybe it makes things a little more realistic to the children. So that's one way that you can do that. Other types of chancel dramas, of course, dramatic presentations of religious themes or biblical truths, some of the things that we were working with yesterday would be more in that category. Choral readings are fun. And those can sometimes, you were interested in some where you used, didn't have to have memorized scripts, and those can be done often very well with scripts so that you don't necessarily have to memorize it if you're getting caught in that kind of a problem. Do different types of choral readings. Alright, and we talked about the gospel, portraying gospel and epistle lessons, doing that, and that's really what we're going to do. And then there are others. There are poetic presentations, musical presentations, ways of contrasting, combining the dramatic with the musical presentation, such as, you know, like Jesus Christ Superstar, or Joseph in His Coat of Many Colors, or there are a lot of them. We did one, I have it here, but I was going to talk about that next week. You know, it's about the three men in the fiery furnace. It's called It's Cool in the Furnace. Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. Our kids did that, and we worked it out with our music director. And that was a lot of fun. Kids really enjoyed it. The children's choir did the singing, and then we had two older boys who did Shadrach and Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar. And we had a most magnificent man, Nebuchadnezzar. This kid said to me, "I'll do anything you want, just don't make me sing." Because I couldn't sing a note, and I knew that. But anyway, he was just absolutely crazy, Nebuchadnezzar, and he just did a good job. So there are various routes that you can go. One of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit today is where to get materials. And this is not an easy task. That is probably the hardest thing of all, and as I think I mentioned yesterday, I probably spend more time looking for materials and reading plays. Once I have the play picked, I feel really good about what we're doing. I don't have any trouble with dealing with the people who are doing the acting, or you know how it's going to be set up, or any insecurity about doing a good job. But that's not a problem for me. My big problem is finding a play that I really like. And from there on, and you have to be a little cautious, I think, in getting some going to the fundamentalist Bible bookstores, because some of their material is very I'd say corny, but it's I don't know what word am I looking for, but it's just not exciting material.
Is it
simplistic, yeah. I don't mind simplistic as much as when they kind of play down to your intelligence. I guess that's simplistic.
Patronizing.
Okay, there's a good word.
Right. Didactic. A lot of them are just so didactic that they shouldn't be called drama at all.
All right. Now, one of the places that I find I can get good material is this Contemporary Drama Service. And there's a couple catalogs here. I don't know. I'll have them around again. So if you ever want to copy down any of this information, you can do that. All you have to do is write to them and get on your mailing list. How do you do?
How do you do?
Are you interested in chancel drama?
Well, I'm interested in nothing else, I think so.
Interested in anything that's going on, right? Good. All right, so they offer a wide variety. This is their specialty. They do Christian drama. It's pretty much their specialty. And they put out a catalog several times a year.
Is it a particular publisher? Or?
Well, that's the name of the company.
That's the name of the company?
Yeah, Meriwether Publishing, LTD. I never saw that before. Okay. But Contemporary Drama Service. It was in Illinois for years and years, but now it just moved to Colorado Springs, so they may have combined with another company. But they do have good material. Now, what you have to do is you send for, you look through the catalog, you read their little blurb, and you have no idea what you're getting. And one of the things I had trouble with is, or one of the things I look for, number one, they never tell you how long it is. And that is a bother to me. If I knew how long it is, because I like to use it in the context of a sermonette, so I'm looking for material that's like 15 or 20 minutes long, normally, unless I want a mini drama of some kind. So they're not always real clear as to how long they are. They invariably will tell you how many characters are in it, and that's helpful. And then they'll give you a little blurb about what it is. And of course, they categorize it, you know, Easter and Lent and Christmas and so on. So you have a clue as to what some of the things are about. But you have to send for copies. Now, there's no way of getting around it. You send for what they call pre-legal copies. And those are reader copies. Now, you do get a discount card, and you get, you know, if you want to then do the play, then you can use that discount card against buying more copies. But the only way you can really do it is to purchase a single copy and read. So you try to outguess them, and you try to figure out from there, what are the best copies? And you do the best you can to guess, and then you get, you know, a dozen copies and you read them through. That's all there's to it. And it's just hard work.
I think that's normal with the other, like Salmon French and all those, that's pretty what you have to do too, I think.
That's right, any of them. All right. One person that I have found who does a good job with writing dramatic material is Stubby A. Poovey. And he has written a whole series of books. I have a number of them. Chancel Dramas for Lent, Lenten Chancel Dramas, Signs of His Coming for Advent and Christmas and Epiphany. This is Let Us Adore Him. Celebrate with Drama, those are mixed. And then these two are general. Mustard Seeds and Wineskins in Banquets and Beggars. I think they have one of these two in the bookstore here, if you're at all interested in, you know, looking at it further or maybe picking up a copy. This is marked down in a quarter, but I've had it for a while, so I think they're much more. I've used several plays out of these two books. I don't think I've ever used any of these. I find that I do better with chancel drama on off-season rather than at Christmas or Easter, because there's so many, you know, you're competing with the choir wants to do something special, pastor has this wonderful sermon he's all anxious to give, and so on, and I find you do better to gear a chancel drama to in between times, to lull times in the church year. Or one Sunday that I find is really terrific, and that's Palm Sunday, assuming you don't have confirmation or something on Palm Sunday. But that is kind of a good day because you know, the pastor's getting all ready to be busy all that week and so on, and that's kind of a good time.
Do you ever do you direct the Christmas program at your church, or do you ever?
I have. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was, well, I'm Sunday school superintendent for a while, and I have a number of times. Next week I will have one presentation that I'll do on children's plays. And I've had some really neat plays for children that I have done. But I have to back that up by saying I did that in the situation where we had a parochial school. And it makes a big difference in the preparation. you get a lot better commitment. And I have tried doing plays with children, and I've written plays for children, but it's hard to get that commitment to practicing, not only from the children, but also from the parents, to get them there for practicing. So that can be a problem. Anyway, he's worth looking at. Now, Puvi, he has very good, my thinking of Puvi is he has very good dramatic material. It's good, you know, to for a play. It's fun. But sometimes his theology, I feel, doesn't get the punch that I feel comfortable with. Now, that's my own personal feeling about it, you know. I feel like sometimes he makes the ending so subtle that people in the pew are saying, I'm not sure what that play meant, you know. And I feel like people have to go away knowing what you said in that play. And the kids who are doing, or the people who are doing the dramatic presentation, need to know what they are saying by what they're doing. You know, it has to come out with a strong message. And so I have changed the plays, or added things in order to bring out what I felt comfortable with. And so I've done that. I'll show you one after a while that I worked over because I just felt uncomfortable with that one. Okay. So those two. Now, the other ways that you get materials are just getting on everybody's mailing list. You know, depending on what synodical group you are with, get on their mailing list, especially for their youth materials. I'm LCMS, pardon the expression. They do have but the one thing that LCMS has that's really fantastic is their youth ministry, the materials from their youth ministry program. And anyway, they just really send out some good resource material. They're, what do they call it? Anyway, they often have plays with this. The address is here on this particular red thing. So if you're interested in getting on their mailing list. Now, I'm sure the other synodical groups, and I've picked up materials from different mailings from various groups. So keep your eyes open, you know, they're liable to send out some kind of a blurb and then just have a few little mini dramas or something on it. Read it, see if you like it, if so, cut it out, you know. And all of that material is free material, you know, you can, unless it says otherwise, that's all free material that you can copy and go with. You're not paying extra for copyright and so on. If you get from Puvi, you have to buy a set of playbooks. If you buy from Contemporary Drama Service, you have to pay for their for the rights to use the play, and that's all listed there. So keep that in mind also. I do have a couple other things here. This is a whole, I don't know where I got this, but it's interesting. If you're into dance and drama, as far as chancel dancing or anything like that, they have a whole list of books that are available on dancing, of all things. You know, I'm surprised at the amount of material that would be published about that. I'd like to be into that, but I'm just as awkward as can be. Someday in my other life, I'll get into it.
Is there someone in your church that's into it?
Not right now. Mm-hmm. No, I wish there were. I wish there were. There are people at the university who were into chancel dance. But now that person left the university and went elsewhere too, so. Mm-hmm. Also, there is a workshop, if you're from out in the Northwest, on writing for the church, or this particular series was on church drama, camp and workshop at Warner Pacific College in Portland. And that's usually the same time every year. It's a weekend workshop. That's usually, let's see, August, in August sometime. And if you write to Warner Pacific College, ask them to put you on their mailing list. They will do that so that you know. When that comes up, they'll let you know. So those are just a few clues. That's not maybe completely helpful to you, but well, maybe will help you get started picking up materials. Also, anybody you bump into who's got pass outs, grab them. You know, just like if I'm passing something out, anything you're interested in, be sure that you pick it up and build yourself up a library of anything that seems usable to you. Okay. Let's do a little reading. It's been too much time talking here. This is Doubting Thomas. This is not, I don't know, it's sort of partway between, hello? It's partway between, here, I'll put you up. It's partway between a full-length drama and a half-length, and a short drama. It could be used either way. I find that if I have a short drama, this one maybe runs anywhere from 7 to 10 minutes, and I find that if it's a little short, what I do is I talk to the pastor and say, hey, why don't you give a little introductory thing about this, because it really is shorter than you really want for a full sermon. So he will give an introduction. You know, I give him the play, and I always, by the way, give the play to the pastor in advance so that if there's any problem, if he sees any problem with it, he lets me know, okay? So that you don't pull any surprises on him at the last minute. That would not be very fair, okay?
Especially if it's your husband.
That's right. He's the one I sometimes forget to show him to. Okay. Then he says, what'd you do that for? This is kind of a neat one. It only has 3 characters, but they have to be male. But as you said, sometimes it's harder to get a larger group of people together. The disciple number one, near the end of the play, becomes Jesus. So it's really, you have Thomas, Doubting Thomas, disciple one, who later becomes Jesus, and disciple two. And I did this with a PLU group of students, college students, for the chapel service. And those 3 guys just did a fantastic job. Just was really neat. But this is done in poetry. And it's very moving. Notice I have some of the sections bracketed. Those are not in poetry, just to give you fair warning. Because they're little in-between sections that are not poetic. In doing anything that's written in poetry, be very careful that you direct it so that they read it as though it is prose. If they read it as though it's prose, it will come out in poetry. The poetry will come out on its own, but they must read it as though it's prose to make it flow well. Let's just try it here. Let's see, do you want to be number one here?
Okay.
Let's see, your first name is
Roy.
Roy, that's right, okay. We can have lady disciples here. Mm-hmm. Let's see, would you please remind me of your name?
Colleen.
Colleen? Okay. Would you read disciple number two? And would you take Thomas, Elder Thomas, all right? Go ahead.
Hey there, Thomas. Where you been tonight?
I've been outside to catch the evening light.
You should have been inside. You should have been with us. The Lord came by and created quite a fuss.
Came by here? Came by here? Don't you think that's kind of crazy? Don't you think that's rather queer?
What makes you say such things, Brother Tom?
I wasn't born yesterday. I've been around. Corpses don't come back to life. They never leave their grave. And this one's been sealed up tight in a cold and musty cave.
But don't you remember what Jesus said? He said the grave wouldn't always be his bed. He said he'd come back to life. Remember his words?
But that's before the Romans came with clubs and swords.
But he meant it, Tom. What the women said was true. The only one who missed him was, I'm sorry, you. We were all inside, a bit afraid tonight. And in the Lord came, right into clear sight.
I wouldn't believe, unless he stood before my eyes. For all I know, that's just a pack of lies.
Wait a minute. Thomas, what's bugging you?
Good old Peter here is trying to cheer me up. But he shouldn't make up a bunch of stories and fairy tales to do it.
What'd he say?
Some nonsense about a visit by Jesus to our humble abode.
But it's true.
Okay, let's hold just a second. I want you to get a picture of what's happening here, you know, as far as dramatically presenting it. Now, as I said before, I often have people, just the participants, just come up out of the pews and move forward into the position. Now, in this case, you'd probably have the two people coming from opposite sides, Thomas and disciple number one. They're coming across, they get up out of the pew, they're walking. You know, the pastor says today we're going to have a dramatic presentation of the story of Doubting Thomas, or whatever, you know, some little introductory business. The two fellas rise up and they meet and they say, hey there, Thomas, where you been tonight? Matter of fact, the PLU guys said, yo, Thomas, where you been tonight? Because that was, you know, where they were at. And they didn't feel comfortable with hey there, but yo, Thomas, where you been tonight? I've been outside to catch the morning light. Well, you should have been in town. You should have been with us. Why, the Lord came by and created quite a fuss. Came by here. Don't you think that's kind of odd? Don't you think that's rather queer? So you've got to get the whole feeling of the movement in this. See, it's not, they're not standing here and just talking, but they're moving. And you have to, if you're working with people that are not used to acting, you have to help them to flow. They may want to stand and just stand and talk. That's fine until they let the lines memorize. Then you've got to shake them loose, you know. If they're not going to move comfortably by themselves, then you tell them, all right, now, when you get to this part, why don't you walk over here for a while and stand over here, you know. One thing you have to keep them from doing is pacing back and forth. Came by here, came by here. Don't you think that's rather odd? Don't you think that's kind of queer?
Dr. Seuss.
You have to watch that they don't do that. You have to help them with that. But you can easily teach a person to move, to get some motion into it. All right. Then, as they're talking, then disciple two comes up from the back. Hey, wait a minute, Tom. Comes walking in, halfway up the aisle, says, wait a minute, Tom, what's bugging you? And then the three of them are in conversation. Let's read a little bit more. Let's start with, but it's true.
Now you're doing it too.
So I am. But I can't help it. I'm a happy person. Jesus came
it
back.
It has to be man to run.
Sorry. I didn't want to say it. I'm a happy man. Jesus came back today. It's really true. So why not be happy, Tom? I'm asking you.
I can't believe. Don't you understand that? Stop trying to make me feel like such a lousy rat. You got to see him, or so you say. Well, if that's true, he'll be back someday. And when he does, I'll be here to see. I'm sorry, but that's the way it's got to be. I'm not going to believe every story that I hear. For all I know, you guys been drinking beer, seeing visions, making up a myth, as you passed around a nicely seasoned fifth. I've got to see if I'm going to believe. If you don't like that, you'll just have to leave.
Boy, what is wrong with you anyhow? We're not making up any story. What we've said is true. We thought you'd be glad to hear. Tell me, what does it take to convince you?
Yeah, Thomas. How can we persuade you that everything the woman said this morning really happened?
Look, fellas, I know you've done your best, but a joke is a joke, a jest is a jest. But don't you think it's dangerous standing here outside? If the Jewish elders catch us, they'll have our hide. Don't you know they're after us? They want to catch us too. They'd be glad to string us up right out in public view.
So that's what's got you, Tom. Are you still afraid? Out to save your skin from being flayed? It's all over now. Like being free. Try as they can't catch me. The Lord is risen. He's risen indeed. That's the good news. That's our new creed.
Self-delusion.
Okay, let's skip over to the next, not the next page, but to the right-hand side where that line goes across. 8 days later, starts 8 days later. On this one, now, these young fellows that did it at PLU, there was a stage like behind the altar area in the chapel that they were using as a sort of a temporary chapel. And when it switched over, see here it says, wait a minute, Tom, we're getting nowhere. Neither one of us is being fair. We'll just have to wait. That's all we can do and hope that something will satisfy you. And Tom says, well, don't hold your breath. Then Tom walked over and he sat up on this stage and he said, well, what you say, fellas? It's been over a week. And he just sat there and was really, you know, very pompous, like, hey, man, you know, here, it's been a week and nothing has happened. And it really was quite effective. Okay, let's try it from there. Number one, 8 days later.
8 days later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them.
Well, what you say, fellas? It's been over a week.
If I were you, Tom, I'd be careful how to speak.
Just the same, it's now the eighth day.
Don't be so smug. Watch what you say.
I've been hanging around here just marking time, without any reason, without any rhyme. Don't you think it's time to leave, get back to Galilee, see our friends, even family? Nothing's going to happen, it's clear. We're just wasting time sitting around here.
Come on, Tom. You promised you'd wait and stick with us. We're not letting you out of our sight. Next time, you're going to be with us.
I can only hope the Lord will come back soon and show you, Tom, I've been a buffoon. The greatest stubbornness I've ever heard. You know, Tom, you've really been a nerd.
Okay, that's enough. Cut it out. You can't help if he wants to live in doubt. But I do hope we can show some courtesy, patience, kindness, and love, if need be. The Lord wouldn't want us carrying on like this. He said by love, we'd show we're really his.
Okay. I promise to cut it out, if the rest of you will.
It's a deal.
The doors were shut, but Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas,
all right, now. Disciple one went off to one side and then came in as Jesus. And it was a whole change of attitude. You know, now you come in, you walk off at it's a deal. You walk off and you turn and you become Jesus. All right. And then number two acts as the moderator. The doors were shut, but Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, Thomas, I've heard every word you said. See, now you're a whole different personality, and your personality changes. See, you've been kind of harassing up till now. You turn and you become Jesus, and you're very gentle and quiet spoken. You become a different person.
And that is also quite effective. Nobody has trouble following that either. Okay?
The doors were shut.
The doors were shut, but Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas,
"That's him." Pardon me, I was looking at the wrong person.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
"Thomas, I've heard every word you said. Do you really think that I was still dead? I know how weak all your faiths can be. So, come on over, come closer to me. Do you see my hand? See the mark still there? If you need proof, then it's only fair to give you all you want and take up your dare. See the wound where they pierce my side? No, don't turn away. There's no place to hide. Place your hand inside it, if you so choose. Go ahead. You've got nothing to lose. And do not be faithless, but believing."
"My Lord, my God."
"Have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have never seen and yet believe."
That's what Jesus said to Thomas that day. The words were passed to us, and here's what they say. "We have no proof. We're left to faith alone. But that's nothing to gripe about, nothing to bemoan. In fact, we're more blessed than they, if we keep the faith right up to the last day."
All right, now at this point, the three line up in a concluding kind of chorus-like thing, the three of them together. Okay.
"Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples,
which are not written in this book,
but these are written, that you may believe that
Jesus Christ, the Son of God,
and that believing you may have eternal life in his name."
Okay. What do you think of that one?
I have trouble with the rhyme. And for me, it's a difficult thing to get past.
It has to be more precisely learned so that you can't, as in a lot of the plays, the kids will change the line slightly, you know, for their comfort. But in this case, if you want to change the lines, you have to be sure that you keep the meter going and everything is okay, you know. So it has to flow well. But I found no problem with doing that. I have another
going through. It was as much as I tried to get away from the sing song kind of thing that is a part of it, you really would have to work on that to make it more natural.
Yeah.
That was difficult to do.
Yeah. I think the melody, the song comes out in spite of what you do, see. But you have to start out being aware that this is prose. But the song effect will still come through.
It's interesting because there's very little poetry being written in rhyme anymore. You know, it's being written in images rather than in the rhyme fashion.
Does he write the Arch books? Is he Ron Unger?
This was Ron Unger.
Yeah.
The Arch books, I think, are written by various people. There are a lot of different authors for those.
That's true.
And could be.
I've used those actually quite successfully with kids within the, again, when we're talking about Sunday school programs, for Christmas and stuff, without having, I've also taught parochial school where it's very nice to have the full advantage of that, but in the parish we're in now, there's no school, and so I've done a number of them and have simplified to the point where we usually quite often have some type of narration either split between the children or whatever, and then the action either done in mime or we've done puppetry and done a number of other things, and it really makes it much easier than to try to have kids memorize lines and just, the people just aren't willing to give up Saturdays anymore to rehearse.
Super. And I'll just mention this briefly because I will do more on it next week, but all of you may not be here. Puppet shows are excellent ways when you don't have time to memorize, if you're working with children.
In our Sunday school, we have a set of four of the ugliest puppets you ever saw in your life. They were originally made by a group of ladies from the Ladies' Aid, who wrote a play and asked the youth group if they would present it as a puppet show. And then they built a box. So we have a box with a hole in it, like a window. And then one puppet is always in the window. And then we put a tablecloth over the altar railing. And then the other puppets, the kids lie down behind the altar railing, and then they do the hand puppets. And they converse back and forth with the puppet up above, which makes it kind of, you know, gives it a third dimension or something. And this is the ongoing stories of Hermie and Gertie. And Hermie and Gertie are two kind of spacey kids. And they're always mixed up about what's happening. You know, they never understand church. They never understand the Bible stories. And they're always a little spacey. And then there's George and Sally, who are always very together, and they explain things to Hermie and Gertie all the time. And we've got a whole series of stories. One lady, who is a very proper lady, has written us a lot of stories, and they sometimes they'll gear into, you know, Valentine's Day, where they come and they, you know, I've got a Valentine for Hermie, da-da-da-da, you know. And then they go into the love of Jesus. You know, it brings it around to the love of Jesus. Or it's for opening rally day, and it's something about coming back to Sunday school. Or it's for summer Sunday school and encouraging the kids to come during the summer Sunday school program. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever you name the subject. Many of them are subject-oriented like that. And then we have one on, well, we have one on the feeding the 5,000. I have a few of them along with me. But this woman started writing them for us for Sunday school, and the teenagers would do it, and they can do that with one practice. All I have to say is Hermie and Gertie, and the kids are very protective about their character. If they're Gertie or Hermie or George or Sally, they are that until they graduate, and then one of the younger kids gets to be that. But as long as they're going to be there, don't you dare take Hermie or Gertie away from me, because I am it until I leave, and then somebody new takes over. So they've done a number of these, but one good practice, and they can put that on because they're reading the scripts down below the behind the curtain. And I've written some of them when I needed it in a hurry, and also some of the teenagers have written Hermie and Gertie's. So we are accumulating little by little a whole set of Hermie and Gertie stories. And I keep telling this lady one day I'm going to type this off and we're going to publish it and become great. But the kids, all we have to do is say Hermie and Gertie, and the little kids are just all excited because, you know, hey, it's Hermie and Gertie day. You
know. Well, I know I don't use a set, but I have a large black thing that I use with puppetry. I quite often do an epistle lesson, a little thing on that with Grandy, which is, and or else. I have a baby puppet too.
Uh-huh.
I use it. It's a large pocket, just comes up through there.
Uh-huh.
And work with that. And it's the same thing. The kids, if they see me in that black,
they know this is it.
Day.
Uh-huh.
But it ends up being, again, a very effective tool,
yeah,
to communicate.
Is this during the church service?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, do y'all have a lot of kids in your church then? Or?
Yeah. Well, we happen to.
We
worship in a school, and it's a mission congregation. And the kids just come forward, it's like this, and they
have. We don't ordinarily do Hermie and Gertie's for church services. We usually do them like for Sunday school openings, or for, a fellowship evening or something like that. The ladies will do a fellowship evening, and they'll say, hey, will you do a Hermie and Gertie for us? And so the kids will put it together. So anyway, that's just off the cuff here. I have so many things to talk about here and so little time. Here is one, it's called The Meaning of Worship. I've not done this one, but it looks like it would be pretty neat to do. It's a sort of a dialogue drama between the pastor and a clown. And my pastor found this, and he said, hey, wouldn't you like to do this? And I said, yeah. I said, we could work that out with you. Well, not with me. It would have to be. I said, you. If you don't do it with you, it doesn't work. You know. Well, maybe we better think about that a while. So, Anyway, one of these days I'll get him to do it, but that's kind of neat. On the meaning of worship, where the clown comes in. Hold it. Today I'd like to talk with you about what it means to worship God. That's the pastor. Hold it. Sorry I'm late. Let's see. Where's a good place to sit? And the clown comes in. Oh, there's plenty of good seats right here in front. Well, why are they all sitting back there? There's plenty of good seats right up here in the front. Oh, well. Well, as I was saying, today we're going to talk about what it means to worship. Go right ahead, says the clown. You've got the floor. You talk about anything you want, and so on. Anyway, you know, but it's a dialogue then on worship. So.
Do you have a clown here?
No, we don't. No. So, we don't have anybody who does clown me. You know, some congregations do.
Oh, William.
Huh?
William.
Yeah. So I've not done that one, but it's kind of interesting. Very quickly, I wanted to go through, just show you this. We're not going to read this, but here's one we did called Such a Sight to See, which was a Palm Sunday drama. By the way, that one on Dowdy Council, of course, is perfect for the Sunday or two Sundays after Easter. And if you're working with teenagers, you've got Easter week for extra practices because they would have more time during that week. So that's a pretty good possibility, time-wise.
Why is it in school?
Well, kids are home from school on vacation usually during Easter week or before or after, you know, and so you may be able to get in extra practice time that way. All right, this one is on Palm Sunday. Now, I just wanted to give you a clue as to why sometimes I change some of the material around. Notice here, this starts out, first announcer, second announcer. This is sort of an interview program. They're interviewing the people involved in the story, the Good Friday, the Holy Week story, okay? And we had three interviewers stationed in different parts. You know, one was in the Mount of Olives, and one was in Jerusalem, and one was on the road, and, you know, we had the three interviewers interviewing these different personalities, and so on. But now, for example, the one interviewer, second announcer, has all of this to memorize in one long span. And that's very difficult, especially working with young people, for them to maintain that, the heightened interest for that long period of time. And so I did do quite a bit of changing on this one. And you'll see that as I went through, I kind of hacked it up. Notice I'm not supposed to make copies of this, and so on. So I would not pass out, I would not give you a copy of this, because it would be illegal. I have made some copies so we would have time just to read it through, but I wouldn't let you keep them, because that would be illegal. When I've given it as a play, then I pay my royalties on it. If you're going to have people write, you need to pay them, you know, otherwise it's a problem.
It's a regular approach.
Yeah. And then I rewrote the entire ending. I didn't like the ending. It was just really uncomfortable for me. So I had, at the end, I let Mary kind of wrap up what was happening, gave a summation of what, leading up to the Holy Week conclusion. And they do the interviews. This is kind of was kind of a fun play to do. For example, let's see, perhaps, first they start out, pardon me, this is we interrupted the pastor. We had the pastors, you know, getting up, making an announcement, and then one of the interviewers came up and said, pardon me, pastor, but we interrupt this program. This is Eyewitness News, and we're going to present this, you know. So they interrupted the pastor. Let's see, one of the interviewers says, I've just noticed a tall, stern-faced young man who seems to be in charge. We use little tape recorders and little mics. You know, they carry the tape recorders like, and use the little microphones, which we didn't have on. They were just dead. You know. But it gave a feeling of interviewing. I've just noticed a tall, stern-faced young man who seems to be in charge. Perhaps he could tell us what this is all about. You, sir, yes. Can you speak with us for a few moments? Oh, always happy to speak with members of the news media. Well, would you care to tell our radio audience what this is all about? Why are these people up here? You don't know? I thought maybe everyone must. We're waiting for Jesus, the Messiah, to appear. Oh, the one they call the promised Son of God, he's coming up here today? Yes, he'll arrive any moment now to lead us into the Holy City and establish his kingdom on earth.
That's fantastic. How do you know what he looks like when he comes?
Oh, that's very simple. You see, we know who the Messiah is. We're his disciples.
You know? You're certain?
Why, certainly. Right now he's making his way up here from the village of Bethany, and as soon as he arrives, we'll start the triumphant procession down the mountainside, across the valley, and into the city and the temple. Since you know who the Messiah is, would you care to tell us something about him?
Oh, of course. His name is Jesus. He was carpenter in the village of Nazareth in Galilee.
A carpenter is becoming a king, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, you seem to know so much about him. You must be one of his captains.
Well, yes, I have taken leadership in this movement. Like most prophets, he's inclined to be a dreamer, wasting his time roaming about. But I've got this event organized so that his entrance will make people sit up and take notice. But, well, I'll see to that myself. He needs to cultivate the right people. I'll make him behave like a Messiah is supposed to act. And, excuse me, they have the donkey here right now. I've got to get a little excitement started, see that everyone has their palm branches. Wait, won't you tell me your name?
Well, yes, I'll tell you my name. You'll hear it many more times from now on. It's Judas, Judas of Iscariot. So, you know, it's quite effective.
And then he interviews a priest from the temple, you know, when Jesus is cleaning out the temple. And a woman. Anyway, they're very interesting.
Does this one have to be ordered?
I'm hearing things.
5 minutes here.
Yeah. Let's just walk through this. I hope to do the other one too. Would you read the part from Moses, please?
Okay.
So what does this mean? I should read the part again?
You're going to die. All right.
Oh, this is a hard and fast thing. Okay.
Well, I think we'll go with it if everybody feels okay, right? All right, and we'll let Devin be the narrator because he kind of would like to, I think. Devin is spoiled with the crutches. Okay. Now, you would all presumably be sitting wherever you would be sitting with your family. Okay? Today's reading from the Old Testament comes from the book of Exodus, chapter 19, verses 2 to 8. After the Israelites had left Egypt, they came to the desert of Sinai and set up camp at the foot of Mount Sinai. Now, let everyone except Moses and God please come and gather here at the foot of Mount Sinai. On either side, you two, right? And you could sit on the edge, or one of you sit and one of you stand, not in the center, off to the side, okay? But at the foot of Mount Sinai, not on Mount Sinai, okay? Mount Sinai is here, and that's where God's going to appear.
And what about Moses? Anywhere?
Wait a minute, Moses.
Okay.
Then Moses, now you wait, Moses, don't come yet. Then Moses went up to the mountain to meet God.
You will be my own people. The whole earth is mine.
but you will be my chosen people.
And so Moses went down and called the leaders of the people together. Now back up, Moses, and with you people gathered together in this manner. Now, as far back as you can, Moses and I, and facing them.
I will tell you what the Lord commanded me. Obey God and keep his covenant, and we will be his own people and dedicate ourselves to him. We will serve him as priests.
Then all the people answered together,
We will do everything the Lord has said.